Meeting to order. Stevie, until we get a quorum, I just want to go over a couple of pieces of business here. Today, I'm going to announce the appointment of the subcommittee for this committee. We talked about having two, and in consultation with the leadership, we're going to actually have one. And the name of the subcommittee is the Environmental Justice and Healthy Housing Subcommittee. So we'll cover those two areas of interest. And we had, for the last month or so, requested who was interested in serving on those committees, and I can tell you that every person who responded who wanted to be on it is on it. So let me just announce that the chair of the committee is Representative Schumper. Other members of the committee are Representative Benson, Representative Peterson, Representative Moe, Representative Swales, Representative Anderson, and Representative Krantz. So that committee will start meeting. I just want to ask you to please be in contact. Lauren Bendit will be contacting to try to set up a time that's convenient for all the subcommittee members to meet. And, of course, all members are welcome to attend the subcommittee meeting, but those will be the appointed members who will actually be voting on the legislation that comes before them. And we have a quorum, so the meeting is officially called to order. And maybe the first thing we should do is look at the minutes for approval. The minutes of February 6th and the minutes of February 7th. Do I have a motion?
I'll move.
President Schumper moves the approval of the minutes for February 6th and February 7th. Any discussion? Additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes for those 2 days indicated by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay. So today we have two pieces of business. We have two pieces of business today. We're going to be considering the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, which I'm the chief author of and will be presenting to you shortly. And then we're also going to hear from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency presentation of the governor's budget. Representative Benson, I wonder if you would take the chair while I present the bill.
Sure. Sure. Thank you. I'm here. Let's see here.
Oh, here he is.
Oh. I'm glad I got that horse for him in time. I'm sure.
Okay. Here we go. That's the plan. There you go.
Okay, we will call this meeting to order.
What's that?
We've already called it to order. Wow, I shouldn't
order.
That'll teach me to be late for a meeting.
And we have the minutes also.
Wonderful.
What you want from me is a presentation of the bill.
I would love it if you would present this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have some witnesses here. First of all, let me just say I'm really happy to bring this bill before you, the bill that provides funding for the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act. Some of you may remember last year we actually passed legislation that created the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, put in statute definitions and plans for dealing with the issue of homeless youth, but we did not fund it. And just to recall, some of you who were on the tour that this committee took, we did see meet with some folks in the homeless youth shelter. And it was a pretty compelling experience, I think, for many of us. And what this bill does is to put funding into the three programs that would serve those individuals: the street and community outreach, the emergency shelter programs, and supportive housing and transitional living programs. And we can talk more about this. I think the most important thing for you is to hear from the people who have been working with those youth and actually hear from some youth who have been experiencing homelessness and have an opportunity to ask questions and clarifications. So I guess the details of the bill, maybe the ones you want to know about, is that we do, in addition to putting those dollars into the program, your summary should explain to you also that we limit the amount of money that can go for administration and for monitoring and evaluation. And we do want to monitor and evaluate the funds that we put into this project. We want to see how well we're doing, if we're really serving the needs of these folks. So tonight, I believe, if we were to go out and count, that we would know there would be at least 1,000, maybe close to 2,000 youth who'd be homeless tonight. That's a lot of young people. And I think it's about time we do something about it. So we're going to have a chance to hear from our advocates. Okay, who's going first? Yeah. I want you to introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. My name is Monica Nelson. At the Bridge, a program serving runaway and homeless youth from throughout Minnesota, one of the first programs of its kind in the U.S., we began something in 2006 that we have never done in our 36 years previous. We had so many youth in need, aged 16 to 21, of a place to sleep tonight, that they came to our shelter at 10 p.m. each night. We would look to see how many beds we had empty, and we did a lottery. Now, some of you witnessed a lottery for adult men when you attended the shelter tour, but now we are doing lotteries for youth. And I have to ask you, when a youth comes to the Bridge at 10 o'clock at night seeking a place to sleep, and what we offer them is a bus schedule and a bus token, what kind of message do you think we're sending them about their value? That's what we've been faced with. We know that within the first 72 hours of a youth becoming homeless, they are faced with compromising one of their basic morals. You have a choice. You can be prey or predator. You can engage in intoxicants or be sexually exploited for shelter. Youth like Jennifer, who was sexually abused at home in Mora, she came to the cities hoping for a better life. She currently performs oral sex on up to 10 men a day so that she can get shelter as a prostituted youth. If that is unpleasant for you to hear, then you can imagine how our inadequate assistance allows me to now scream without raising my voice that we need help. Some people say if you make it hard enough, they won't want to be homeless. If they spend a few nights outside, they'll go running home. They'll get tired of this adventure if we don't enable them to live this lifestyle. The truth is, they're already tired since they have to get up at 4 a.m. to bus to their school of origin, often in the suburbs. Bus riders like Chris, technically an adult at 18, he didn't have a place to live, wasn't finished with high school, and didn't have enough income to afford his own place in his community. So he too came to the cities in search of help. Thankfully, he found transitional housing and support to get back to school each day in Lakeville. For some reason, many people think that homeless kids are only born in Minneapolis or St. Paul. Please review the handout for a sampling of cities that youth in Minneapolis shelters were recently transported to daily in order to continue their education in their school of origin. We are not busing children from Minneapolis shelters to integrate. We're busing them back home. But there's hope. Thank God we carry hope. I have hope for youth like Paul, who, while living with severe and persistent mental illness, is also technically an adult at age 19, but developmentally about 14. Paul has shifted from shelter to jail to commitment, and as I always say, carrying a sense of humor, which is a survival tool, commented to the judge who discharged him and asked where he would like to be discharged to, said, "I don't really care as long as it's Vikings territory." By funding the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, you ensure that many other state goals advance. Would you like to see youth graduation rates rise, watch teen pregnancy rates drop, decrease spending on youth and adult corrections and public health costs, How about increasing employment? How about reducing the number of long-term homeless adults you see panhandling on the freeway exit? Then pay close attention to where runaway and homeless youth from Minnesota will lay their heads tonight. Youth like Amanda and Tina, who you will hear from shortly, and recognize how our support creates the direction for the future of their lives.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen. Representative Clark, do you have another testifier?
Hi, my name is Stacey Peterson. I'm from Catholic Charities Fail and Shy program in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I'm here today just to kind of talk about homelessness in general as far as the greater Minnesota area, because I think there's a lack of understanding that it's a really huge problem in greater Minnesota as well as the Twin Cities area. I believe that you guys were handed out this sheet with the state of Minnesota on it, and it kind of tells you some of the beds that are out there. I want to make this clear that these are beds on here, and you can see in greater Minnesota that there's not a whole lot. And that transitional living program scattered sites in St. Cloud, that's my program. All we have in the St. Cloud area is 8 beds. And they are scattered sites. They're not even beds. There's a lack of emergency shelters, supportive services, permanent housing, and transitional housing for youth in St. Cloud. On a daily basis, we are taking referrals into my program in St. Cloud, which is the SHY program, which stands for Supported Housing for Youth. This program, what we do is we take in kids for up to 6 months. We help them with supportive services such as case management and financial assistance and some independent living skills to get them out on their own. These youth come to us and we can help them up to 6 months. But the problem is becoming that we don't have enough staff. We don't have enough supportive services to carry on all of these, all of the greater Minnesota. And right now, we're currently serving the counties of Benton, Stearns, Sherburn, Wright, Anoka, Todd, Mille Lacs, Morrison, and Catholic Charities actually serves a 16-county area, and we're starting to branch out into that 16-county area, and there just aren't any services available to them. Some of the kids that we're turning away are coming from residential services. They're coming from foster homes. They're coming from crisis homes. Just there's so many various situations. Last year alone, we served 41 kids in our SHY program alone, and the year before we served 37. We turned away, in 2005, we turned away 51 kids, and in 2006, we turned away 56. That is only my program. I want you to understand that that's just my program, and we're serving just that area, and we have some eligibility guidelines in our program that are really stringent that don't allow us to serve all kids. So we're turning away a whole lot more kids that we're not even tracking. And I think the greater Minnesota is seeing that as well. So I guess I'm here today just to say thanks for supporting the homeless, the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act. And if you have any more questions, please contact the shelters. Get involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson.
And Mr. Chairman, I will turn to our youth who have, I think, demonstrated a lot of courage to come here today and testify.
Hello, my name is Tina Collins. Thank you for listening to my story. On behalf of homeless youth, I was born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota. My grandmother had raised me and my siblings. At the age of 20, I became homeless because of my grandmother, who had a brain aneurysm in 2006. This tore my family apart. We had to be in our own, and that led me to be in my own. I was, like, real scared and everything like that. I didn't know what to do. So what I did, I had moved with my auntie in a two-bedroom apartment, which was really, like, messed up. Like, I had to sleep on the floor, buy my own food and everything like that. I attended college for nursing, and at the time I had to drop out because of the situation that was going on. At this time, my auntie, she had to move or whatever, and at first I didn't know where I was going to go. I was just, like, scared, nervous, like, I don't have nobody, like, a close family member or nothing like that. What am I going to do? At the time, I was on the waiting list for a housing situation. It just had to take some while for me to come up on top of the list. around this time, like, I had a summer job, but the thing was, like, it ended because it was just a summer job. So what I had to do was, like, find another job and see where I was going to end up at. So what I did was, me and my auntie, like, we had got into it or whatever. Like, she put her hands on me and everything like that because she had a drinking problem. So the first, I mean, me and my auntie, we get along real good, but this was the first time I was just like, wow, like, she just put her hands on me. What am I going to do? Time, like, my face is just, like, really, really messed up. Like, I had, they, like, well, I called all my family members. They told me, like, I couldn't come stay with them because they had no room for me. So what lead me, I had to call my case manager, and what happened was she gave me so many, like, numbers, like, resources, like, youth shelters. The thing was, like, there was no youth fest open that night. So my only option was going to, like, a women Baptist shelter, which I was scared. I didn't know what to do, being, like, a woman shelter. I was only there for 2 weeks. So what happened was, like, my counselor there, he got me into, like, a transitional living program, which I was only there for a month, and finally came on top of this for my apartment. At the time, that's when I got a job as a parent outreach worker with the organization called Safe Zone that helped me, like, with my resume and everything like that, just, you know, build my skills up. At the time they had a job opportunity, that's when I, you know, did it or whatever. I was like, well, prayer outreach worker, I have experience working with youth, I could try this. So at the time, that's when I got my job, and then, like, the day after that, I moved to my apartment. I know at the time, like, I know how to, like, face life, like, okay, well, I'm 20 now, it's time for me to be on my own. Like, my grandma's not always going to be there for me, even though, like, she didn't make it due to brain aneurysm, though it was, like, real bad, where the doctors just didn't think, like, she was going to make it. But now, like, I'm, like, so proud of myself, because at first I wanted to give up. Like, I was just stressed out, like, what am I going to do now? So, plus I had, like, a lot of support from, like, friends, from my family members, a lot of my coworkers that I work with now. But I just want to say that, like, working with youth is, like, really important to me. Like, a lot of youth look up to me because, like, I'm around their age, and they, like, you know, come from the same setting, like, no one by their side or anything like that. And that's what I had to realize. Like, I'm grown now. I have so much stuff that I have to do. So right now, like, I live in my apartment right now. And, like, I'm going to go back to school this summer to finish up my nursing, because, like, I've been wanting to do, but it's time I had to give up. But I just want to thank all you guys today for, like, supporting us and just keep, you know, getting us help or whatever. Thank you.
My name is Amanda Danielson, and I was born and raised in St. Paul. I became homeless at the age of 15 because home was not a safe place, and I don't have any family. I then stayed with about 15 other homeless youth in abandoned buildings, under bridges, and in dumpsters. We frequented the drop-in center, Safe Zone, for food, and when it was closed, we'd either panhandle or we'd eat out of garbage cans. I always wished that I had a place to go. Now I'm a peer outreach worker, and I think that what outreach workers do is very important, and although things have improved in the past 7 years, there's still a lot to do. It's hard being right there with a young person and not being able to find them a place to sleep that night. What I would like you to know about homeless youth is that they're just like any other kids. Maybe some got dealt a bad hand, but it doesn't mean they're bad kids. Our vision at StreetWorks states all youth have the opportunity to be nurtured, to belong, to be heard, to be valued, and to have their needs met. And I feel that it's our duty as adults to try to help our youth. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
To conclude, there are some things that we shouldn't have to deserve. One thing you can say about kids who run or become homeless is that they are survivors. Imagine the faith that is required to, in the face of lives like you've heard, hold on, wait your turn, and choose to live. Whether they come from Minnetonka or Duluth or Minneapolis and are afraid of the streets that they'll walk down tomorrow, they care enough about themselves to flee from hurt and towards safety. They simply aren't willing to keep believing the message that nobody really cares or believes that they have real needs. And for some of them, they understand that something's not quite right inside, that they need help, or that even though they're running, they were perhaps the healthiest one back at home. All of them deserve tremendous credit for having the courage to come to us. And when they do, if I am to believe that youth are capable of more productive lives, I have to believe that you and I are capable of better than this, a bus token. Thank you for your support of runaway and homeless youth.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman and members, if you have any questions, be glad to try to answer them or have any of our witnesses answer them.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my first question, I've got several here. The first one is, what is the intent of this bill? Is it to lay it over or is it to pass it on to a next committee? Do you know, Representative Clark?
Yes.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. This bill will be the first bill that will lay over for the purpose of creating an omnibus committee bill.
Okay.
And then we have several more, I think, tomorrow, and we're going to start building our bill. I guess it's the first one today.
Couple follow-on questions.
Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Clark, I know I was on this, on the tour that we had, and it was very educational. I was just wondering what the ages are of the target group that we're talking about.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the way the law reads, we're talking about youth who are from 8 to 17 as being the first group. And then the second group is 18 to 20. My understanding is that when the Wilder Foundation did their survey, they delineated those two groups because of particular needs. And I don't know, maybe we'd like to hear some more specifics, but I know that we're talking about at least 1,000 youth in that first category and maybe another 1,500 or so, between 500 and 1,000, between 500 and 1,500 in the second category. So it's a lot of kids. Mm-hmm.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, younger youth in that 8 to perhaps 15 category are often in a runaway situation, and often we can reunify with family about 80% of the time. But for those older homeless youth who are under age 21, we found that group, while technically they may be adults, it is a key time in their life to get services toward furthering their education, finishing their education, and part of the law passed has them allowed as homeless youth, so up to age 21. So those are our target within the homeless youth community.
Okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's good to hear that 80% of those individuals are reconnecting with their families. I guess that was my first concern, is that we aren't creating a sanctuary for kids who kind of don't want to face up. I understand that through the statistics here that about 46 come from either physically or sexually abused houses. Those are not the ones we want to send back, obviously. And we want to begin to address some of the healing process that needs to take place there. But I guess my other question would be for the other 20% from 8 to 17, is there any type of program, and I understand Catholic Charities has got some, but I mean, if you've got an 8-year-old who is in a traumatic home situation and we're pulling them out, we're putting them into a foster care program, I guess that's what I'm kind of questioning is, does this process that we're looking at today, does this facilitate a new avenue in that, or is it simply augmenting the current avenues that we have?
Chair, Representative Nielsen. Well, the homeless community wouldn't be pulling the child out. That would be a child protection issue.
Hmm.
So youth who are 18 or 8 to 15 years old would most likely go into care, which is something that we need to address with regard to our out-of-home placements. But from our perspective, when we're seeing them in that emergency situation, before care, before placement, we don't want them to end up squatting in an abandoned house. We need them to be in a short-term therapeutic setting. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Other questions? We have Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we toured the homeless youth place in Minneapolis, I was aware of all this, but it's quite another thing to see it. And when I heard about the tokens, that really disturbed me a lot, the bus tokens. Are the resources that are proposed for this particular bill sufficient so that I do not have to go home to my district and tell people as they go to their homes at night that there are going to be a number of young people riding a bus all night?
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a crack at it. First of all, I believe that the $4 million we're talking about here takes a very significant step forward, but it won't solve all the problems. The three types of programs that will be served or be eligible to receive the funding are the community street and community outreach, the emergency shelter programs, and the supportive housing and transitional living. Now, I did try to find out actually the answer to your question myself, like what percentage of the need are we actually meeting by this this first money that we're putting into it. And I don't have a complete answer, but I think it's a very, talking with the advocates, I think it's a very responsible start. And part of the purpose of this legislation is also to evaluate its effectiveness. You'll see it's written right into the legislation that we have to have an evaluation of this program, and we'll receive a report back as the legislature. We'll be able to see how we're doing with this amount of money. But I think maybe, I don't know if you can add to that at all, but I don't have an exact number in terms of the percentage of the need. I know we're not meeting the need. We're not over meeting the need for sure, and I'm not sure exactly how far we're going.
Ms. Nielsen?
Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Oh,
do you have a response there, Ms. Nielsen?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative, let me just say that this funding fills a niche in part of a bigger plan. You may be aware of the state's business plan to end homelessness, and there are other facets that will help homeless and runaway youth addressed in different areas of prevention or services or housing. This fills a niche that those other things do not.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Benson.
I'd just like to follow up. If it's possible for us to get some hard numbers on this, I suspect when the omnibus bill is all put together, we maybe have a better idea. And I would like to reserve the right to have the committee consider a more adequate funding if it turns out that's what we need. I'm not prepared to sit here as a representative and have young people riding buses at night, middle of the winter.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
We're on to Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Clark, and the rest of you for coming to testify today. In front of you, you have a sheet, all of us, that says Homeless Youth Services in Minnesota. And if you look at that sheet, this is obviously not just a Twin Cities problem. And in fact, one of the emergency shelters is the Evergreen Shelter in Bemidji, which turns away many people because of lack of resources. And I'd like to share this with Representative Searson. There's a man who was housed there a few years ago in Evergreen Shelter who is now a business owner in Bemidji. He was returned to his family. George Stowe, his father, is a friend of mine, and was able to through the help of Evergreen Shelter, was able to come back to the home with some issues there that they helped him work through. And now he employs 80 people in our community, a multi-million-dollar business. And I don't know what would have happened to him had he not had that transitional help and emergency shelter from Evergreen House. So not only is it the right thing to do, it's an important economic development tool for greater Minnesota, helping our most valuable assets, our young people, actually become contributing members of our community. So a statement and then a question, perhaps for Representative Clark. We would like to invest in more of these children or young people. And I'm assuming that this is going to be also available for increased grants for public-private partnerships like what goes on at the Evergreen Shelter. Am I correct?
You certainly are.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you could draw your attention to lines 13 and 14, of the bill, it's, the funding shall be directed to meet the greatest need with a significant share of funding focused on homeless youth providers in greater Minnesota. And that's really recognizing the fact that we have not been meeting the need in greater Minnesota. So the Evergreen Shelter in your area certainly would be one of those that would have a high priority as a result of this language in this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions have kind of partially been answered, but I think the last two questions. I think this is an issue that is clearly important. I mean, if you're from rural Minnesota, you have to be observing the street kids that are kind of beginning to appear in our communities, and there's a significant need. I guess I just have some questions kind of related more to the scope of this thing. And the $4 million, it was alluded to, is this enough? Or I guess my question is this: can we get our arms around how much this will do? Is there some way can we put a real number on this? How many kids will this serve over the course of the life of this funding here? Or is there some way we could kind of...
Yeah, I appreciate that question because I had the same one. So I deferred long enough to get the right question out. Ms. Nielsen, can you handle that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, I did not prepare that data. Perhaps one of my colleagues has it.
We're going to get that. I can guarantee you the number wasn't just picked out of thin air, but it's important that you do have the answer to that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, thanks for that question.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Kirsten Anderson Stembridge. I'm with Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. And it's somewhat of a difficult question to answer, in part because the range of services that we're discussing in this bill is quite extensive, from street outreach to transitional living programs, and providing that relationship and engagement in a street outreach relationship is much less costly and much fewer services are provided than in helping a young person establish life in an apartment or another living independent living situation on their own. So based on the vast difference in cost and some very approximate estimates of cost, I think we can safely say that we can serve around, like again, attempting to meet needs as they're stated in greater Minnesota, we can serve probably about 5,500 youth per year with this $4 million. So to an excess of 10,000 young people over the biennium would be our assumption. But of course, it's a major caveat that we must say that it's all based on the need, which is going to be indicated to the department based on all of the responses to the request for proposal that are submitted by organizations statewide.
Mr. Chair, I might just point out, with using those numbers, it's meeting about a fourth of the need, annual need. So we're not going to be rolling in a lot of excess funding here, but I think it is a significant step forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I follow up?
Eastman.
One of the previous testifiers said that this was a niche. This was a niche program, and that there's other larger homeless initiatives that are going to be covering a lot. So, I mean, when we talk about the numbers, how big is the niche? I mean, if we talk about the total number of estimated homeless, and we use that number, we're only meeting a fourth of the need. But if this is just a niche, can we kind of tell how this fits into the rest of the initiatives that are out there?
Ms. Nielsen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, what I was referencing are things like FHPAP, Family Homeless Prevention, or some of the housing initiatives that are being proposed. And the niche addresses the youth who may not need to go into permanent supportive housing or who may need a short bit of assistance and can be served better by a youth organization. I think what happens with regard to our ability to do prevention, for instance, with homeless families, will directly result in how many homeless unaccompanied youth we have. We know that after poverty, the second leading indicator of why an adult is homeless is if they experienced homelessness as a child. So if we decrease the number of homeless Minnesota families, we will decrease the number of homeless Minnesota youth. Part of that we don't have control over working in the homeless youth community, so we look then to our partners in the state to address some of that. And depending on their success, we'll create our need.
Okay.
Representative Eastman.
Thanks for that clarification. So, I guess what I'm hearing you say is that's a good clarification. So the other homeless programs are not targeted specifically at youth. They're targeted more at the larger picture. And they impact youth, but this one is targeted directly at homeless youth.
Or they may provide, for instance, I'm sorry, Mr. Yes. Chair, Representative Eastland, they may provide capital dollars to produce housing, or they may provide the rent subsidies, but not the street outreach workers to get the youth into housing. So this is kind of a gap.
Okay. Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yep.
Representative Eastland. On the map, my district's not on here, but we have homeless kids, and we have lots of local initiatives that are out there working to try to help with this issue. We have a kind of a drop-in center called Someplace Else that's open that kids come to. We have a lot of churches are working in the housing of homeless families, but that's primarily homeless families that, you know, kids wouldn't qualify because it needs to be a family. But how would this initiative be able to work in an environment like that where there isn't a place that is kind of taking the initiative? But we have a lot of interest and a lot of supportive kinds of things happening. How would this impact a community like that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, one of the things Representative Clark referenced was capacity. And what we are finding is that we can't keep sending Minnesota's youth to the bridge in Minneapolis for services because the bridge does not have the capacity. We need part of this funding to address how we're going to build capacity in local communities so that faith communities or others can assist children in their own cities. Right now, as you saw from that list of schools, I think people are assuming that the Minneapolis homeless kids are just Minneapolis kids, but whether they're from, well, you can see the list. Those kids don't want to be in Minneapolis. They're afraid to be downtown St. Paul. They don't know the streets when the shelters close. Even if they're 18 or 19 years old, when we put 600 adults out at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, where is a kid from Maple Grove going to go? They're afraid, and then they become the prey. So that's why we need part of this to look at capacity for us to continue this work. There are only so many people within Catholic Charities and Lutheran Social Services and the bridge and street works that can expand further and further out in greater Minnesota.
One more question, if I could.
Representative Eastland.
I'm just looking at the bill itself, and in the first section there, it says up to 5% of the funds appropriated may be used for program administration. Up to 8% may be used for the purposes of monitoring and evaluating runaway and homeless youth programs receiving funding. And then the rest of it is evidently used directly for services so my question is it kind of piggybacking off my last question is where are the funds in here for developing more capacity? We can administrate the program and we can pay for evaluation of the program, but are there funds in this number that are going to be used for building capacity that, in one sense, would be more of a longer-term investment than direct services to homeless kids right now? I guess that's kind of getting at the issue of my community a little bit.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, my understanding is that by investing in programs that we are able to assist in building capacity, whether it's through technical assistance, our administration. For instance, right now the bridge is working with suburban Hennepin County from Osseo to Minnetonka, Hopkins to St. Louis Park, where they have homeless youth. And by using our expertise to train and provide technical assistance to those communities, they then will build the capacity to be able to serve their own youth.
Thank you. Ms. Anderson?
Mr. Chair, President Eastland. Also, in the context of the bill, you can see that there is language that references capacity development and technical assistance, and there is no breakout as to what percentage of the funding or what dollar amount should be used for those activities. But in the midst of our discussion and in preparation for this proposal, there was a great deal of discussion around the importance of capacity development and what was decided or what were, the proposal includes is to, again, put that as a priority and allow for the expenditures to be determined within the RFP process between the organization and the department.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, yes. Representative Eastland, I hope that people in your district will apply for those grants, and I think based on what you said, there's some folks there that might be ready to do that.
This is a huge need, Mr. Chair, and I mean, I think this is something that we should be supporting. In terms of long-term homeless issues, I mean, these are people who are at super high risk to be in this category for a long time, and this would be a point in time where we could make an intervention that could last a lifetime.
Okay, Representative Trumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did a little quick calculating. If you spend $4 million on 5,500 kids, that's about $727 a year, which is about $2 a day. My question for Ms. Patterson, you used the word eligibility. Could you expand a little bit on that? You said you turned away a lot of kids because they weren't eligible or they didn't meet eligibility standards.
Ms. Patterson?
Mr. Chair, when I was saying that, I actually was referring to our funding, our specific funding for Catholic Charities. Our funding had, basically states that we can serve youth that are aging out of care. There's not a lot of funding for youth that are just in a crisis situation that are referred from a school district. That's what I was referring to. Some of the other agencies may have other funding, but I'm guessing that they don't have a whole lot of it. Hope that answers your question.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm in support of the program, but I've got a couple of administrative questions. When I look at up to 5% appropriated for administration, that's $200,000 a year. That's $400,000 for the 2 years. Now, I'm assuming that would then go to Health and Human Services. And then we appropriate 8% for the evaluation, which is $320,000 a year, which is $640,000 contract to the evaluation administrator, which is almost $1,000 a day over 2 years to evaluate the program. And I would surely hope somebody is going to take a real hard look at putting out a $640,000 evaluation contract. And the reason I'm saying that, as close as I can equate personally, I know that, for instance, the Minneapolis Council of Churches has administered the faith-based initiative program coming out of Washington for the last 3 or 4 years. And they were never paid anything near that for administrating the federal program in the metro area. So I'm just kind of curious where that number came from, because it's eating up, you know, 13% of the $8 million in admin and evaluation, and I'm having trouble coming to grips with that.
Ms. Anderson-Stenbridge.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, thanks for the question. I think that the numbers of 5% and 8% were included based on recommendations. We understand that to administer this kind of a program and to do the somewhat intensive work Representative Eastland is referring to of supporting organizations to do that capacity development and internal assessment, we want to be sure that our colleagues at the department have the internal capacity that they need to be able to make that happen. So it's simply out of that concern that that number is included, and if there is greater wisdom in this room as to a more appropriate number, certainly we would yield to that. But that's primarily why it was included in this proposal. And then as for the evaluation number, we consulted with various evaluation professional firms, and I am no evaluation expert myself, and I understand that you oftentimes have to receive numerous PhDs to do a good job in this category, and that was the percentage that they listed is typically used when determining the cost for evaluating a program, and so that's why it was included. And to do that kind of evaluation requires extensive amounts of interviewing, calculations, etc., which is why the cost is a little bit high.
Okay, Representative Peterson.
Who will make that determination? The bill says up to the 5% and up to the 8%. Does that mean the Department of Health and Human Services will set the criteria for that evaluation and will then go out for an RFP? And if they can get a good job done for $200,000 as opposed to $600,000, it would seem to me there's another $400,000 for the direct client need. I mean, so that number scares me, and I want to know who's going to hold the reins on the horse when it starts galloping with this wagon.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark,
based on your comments, I think you're going to be one of the helpers. And, I do want to say that, if we are able to give the requested amount here, remember this committee, we don't have our target yet. I don't know what we're going to have in this committee to spend, and I'm very pleased at the response of this committee in terms of understanding the need here and really wanting to spend the dollars wisely. So whatever we get, yes, the Department of Human Services will be, driving the team here, helping us figure out what those are. Now, this is a maximum. There's nothing that says they have to spend that much money. I'd be surprised if we were able to get all of what we need, but I think it would be wonderful if we could because of, I think, just even identifying today what percentage we may be funding. As a matter of fact, just to go a little further on that particular question, I would like to just call Michael Dahl to help me with it, looking at the questions on what percentage we're funding. But I hope I've answered your question. It's the Department of Human Services. This committee certainly can take a look at that, and we can certainly offer advice and guidance, and we can even, change these numbers if we need to. I think at this point I would, like to say let's go forward and see if we can get some more answers to your question about what, the criteria might be for coming up with those numbers. I'd ask him to address the question a little bit of the need, and he might even be able to shed a little bit more light on this because I think he was involved in helping put these numbers together.
Okay.
Let's start with that.
Mr. Dahl?
Mr. Chair, my name is Michael Dahl. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I appreciate when you all ask the question, what percentage of the need will we be able to fill with the funding amounts that we ask for? But I'm always squirming in my chair when that question gets asked about homelessness because people aren't, churches laugh at this, people aren't born homeless, but some people maybe, but homelessness is something that happens because of a failure elsewhere. So the better question is the one that you asked, Representative Eastland, how many people can we serve? It takes improvements in the foster care system. It takes improvements in the cost of affordable housing to really get at how do we address the need. I guess I would just ask that as this committee is making decisions about affordable housing and homelessness funding, to put it in the context of there's a lot of things that impact the level of money that you must spend to address the need that's out there. It is true that based on current costs and based on what the current need is, this gets at a fourth of those that need the help. If you're able to make improvements in the out-of-home placement system and in homelessness prevention, you will be able to reduce the need and the amount of money that this committee will have to spend. On the question of up to 5%, right now, we have Office for Economic Opportunity that runs emergency shelter and transitional housing programs and would also be running the youth programs. Their staff has been cut dramatically over the years, and so the amount of technical assistance that they're able to provide shelters on how to provide the best services and connect people with different programs that are outside the homelessness system has dramatically fallen. And so basically what we'd be looking at, I would assume, is what is the correct number of FTEs to help an increased number of programs that we could get sited in new parts of the state as well as provide the adequate technical assistance. We're not out to spend more money of this on administration if it's unnecessary, but we want to make sure we're able to provide quality care inside our shelter system.
Okay. I was just consulting whether we have any more information on the evaluation system. I'll get back to the committee on that because I actually probably need to know a little more about that myself.
Representative Peterson?
It would seem to me at this early stage of the evolution of this bill that if we were to say that no more than 10% of the funds would be spent in the form of administration and monitoring and evaluation. I think we'd get a lot more buy-in from, I mean, anytime you appropriate this kind of money and you're starting to eat 11, 12, 13, 14% of the money for administration, most of us would be very careful about donating to an organization that did that. And so I'm just would suggest to the author that maybe if you just would say no more than 10% for those two categories, I'm not sure what the worst would happen, but it would sure help, I think, the concept of how much is going to get eaten in admin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Representative Houston, what I suggest is let's do a little more research on this, and I will help you offer an amendment, or you can offer it directly in our omnibus bill to actually clarify what you're talking about. So between now and then, we've got enough time, we can clarify. I do want to make sure that we're meeting the need of capacity building in Greater Minnesota. That is just a real neglected area, and so I don't want to cut that short if it requires us to do a few percent more than that. So
okay.
We can research that a little bit and get back to committee on that. And
we
can be the author of that amendment, I guarantee you.
We have time for two more questions. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Peterson. Specifically, I know in the St. Cloud area, we have District 742 has a children's home. And I'm wondering if Catholic Charities interfaces with the children's home at all in situations like this where we have children who are displaced and find some permanent housing for them. Is there that conduit?
Ms. Pedersen?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Severson, yes, that is the case. Catholic Charities does intervene with those kids and brings them into the children's home at this point. However, if the children's home is too full at that time, that doesn't happen always. But yes, Catholic Charities does intervene for the younger population as well as some of the older. My program has started doing a lot of work supportive work with those youth to help them age out as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. And the last question on this issue for today, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, are your testifiers. It says in the bill here that you're expending funds on each area of the continuum of care to ensure that programs are meeting the greatest need. I'm wondering what each area is as far as the continuum of care. It's not delineated in the bill unless it's referenced back. I'm not catching that. And the programs that go along with that. And that's on the last line of the back page. It says funds are to be spent in each area of the continuum of care. I wonder how many areas are there and how many programs are involved in this appropriation.
Representative Clark.
Let me take a first stab at that. If you actually look at the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act that we passed last year, again, we passed a bill that defined a lot of these issues. We just didn't fund it. And we said we'd come back this year and look at it. So my understanding is the continuums include the homeless and runaway, the street and community outreach and drop-in programs. So that's kind of the most immediate sort of emergency sort of situation. Then it includes the emergency shelter program, and it also includes the supportive housing and transitional living program. So those three areas, I believe, are the three programs that we're talking about. And then we do have the limits that we just talked about in terms of administration. So the continuum of care, as I understand, includes that whole list there. And
Ms. Nielsen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, for some youth, they don't need to go through the entire continuum of care before they can exit their experience of homelessness. So a street outreach worker may be able to help find them a place to stay with extended family. They may need emergency shelter for a short time and then never experience homelessness again. Or transitional housing may help prepare them to go into post-secondary education. So each pieces of those continuum are important that we provide because they serve different youth at different times.
Maybe just one final thing. We didn't list the whole existing statute here, but if you do want to look at it, it does list under each of those three categories what the services are. And you might notice that for the first two, family reunification is listed as number one. And then it goes on to conflict resolution, assistance in temporary emergency shelter, assistance in obtaining food, clothing, and so on. That's just like in the first one. And the second one does the same list, and the third one has another list. So there are, you know, people have kind of thought this through and thought what the actual needs are, and they are in the statute.
Okay. I believe in front of us, committee, is the motion to lay over this bill to be heard in our omnibus packaging. We'll just do a vote.
I'll move that. I'll make that motion again, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Thank you very much, committee members. I really appreciate your thoughtful discussion on this bill.
Next on our agenda is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency presentation of the governor's budget and recommendations. And I believe we have Commissioner Mr. Tim Marks. Wonderful. Commissioner, how much time do you think you'll need to go through it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can get through the formal presentation in about 40 minutes, and depends upon your questions you want to ask, and you can speed me up or slow me down as you want. I did this before the other body, and it took about 40 minutes, including their questions.
Okay. We currently have 30 minutes left of our committee time.
All right.
and actually, if it's possible to make... I think we'd prefer to get through it all if we could, but I'm going to try to be mindful and try to leave a few moments at the end for any questions that may occur. So how about 20 to 25 minutes?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I will...
Good luck.
and so I will skip some of the things in the presentation. You should have before you two items. First is a bound copy of a document that... It says Minnesota Housing Fiscal Year 08-09 General Fund Budget Presentation, and then another two-page sheet that is a summary of the document that on the second page has some yellow rows in it. And I'll be referring to the two-page summary throughout this presentation, which is also included in the documentation. And again, formerly Tim Marks, Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. It's good to be before you again. On January 19th, I presented to you an overview of the agency, and I'm now very happy to present to you the governor's proposed housing budget for the next biennium. What I thought I would do is give you a sense of, in the presentation summary on page 2, of how the governor's proposed budget fits into our entire programs, first. Second, to talk about the income distribution of housing assistance, who we serve. I think I will skip the geographic distribution. That material is in your packets. I'd be prepared to address that by question. And then I will get into the details of the proposed housing budget. So in the packet, page 3, is a summary of our affordable housing plan for the current biennium. And again, Minnesota Housing invests $1.3 billion on a biennial basis in affordable housing throughout the state. And I'll refer to the pie chart on the left, the sources of the funds. And you'll see that the source that we're going to be talking about during this budget presentation is the 8%, or for this biennium, $105 million, which is 8% of our entire affordable housing plan. Is the state appropriations. But it's very important to recognize that even though a relatively small portion of our total budget, these are the dollars that make our programs work very well in terms of being able to provide the soft second mortgages, the down payment assistance, the family homeless prevention program that was alluded to earlier, that allow us to serve very low incomes and target our resources to those with the greatest housing challenges. And Minnesota Housing and the housing community in Minnesota has a great record in comparison to other states of really targeting our resources to most in need. So that is the context into which the governor's proposed budget rests. Slide 4 gives a description of the relative incomes of whom we serve throughout the state. And what this table or chart really says is 75% of the households we serve are for a household with incomes of $20,000 or less, and $20,000 is the poverty level for a household of four. So very good record at serving those with lowest incomes.
I will summarize briefly the charts on set 5 and 6, which relate to the geographic distribution of the resources that we allocate throughout the state, and basically make the point that we do a good job of providing resources based upon eligibility of population in a particular area. And you can see the details for your region in the materials there. So what I will do is jump right to pages 7 and 8 in the proposed housing budget and give you a sense of what's in this table. On page 7 is a summary sheet of the entire governor's proposed housing budget. And I think this is a robust budget, an aggressive budget that we're very proud to present to you that provides the context for meeting a lot of affordable housing needs throughout the state of Minnesota during the coming biennium. On the far left of the page, you'll see the 06-07 current appropriations in place for all of our various programs, totaling $70.4 million. So that's the current biennial appropriations. What you see in the far right is the total appropriations recommended by the governor of $114 million for the coming biennium. And what you see in the middle is a program-by-program analysis of whether the governor is recommending a base increase and the percentage of that, a non-base increase, and then the total amount of increase. So, for example, let's take the Housing Trust Fund, which is the third row down in the programs, and that program provides rental assistance for very low-income households. The current appropriation is $12.6 million. The governor is recommending a base increase of $4.5 million, a non-base increase of $5 million. The total increase is $9.5 million for a total proposed appropriation of $22.1 million. So that's how that table is constructed for your reference. And again, the totals. The governor is recommending $114 million, which is a total increase of 62%. Of that, the base portion is a 27% increase, and a 35% is a non-base increase, again, to a total of 62%. So that's how the table is constructed for your reference now and later. If you turn the page to page 8 and also look at the separate handout that you have, this was put together as a guide to the proposed budget. And what you see in the far left column, program category, are the five kind of categories of programs that are run through Minnesota Housing. Development and redevelopment, homeless prevention and supportive housing, home ownership, preservation, and residential and organizational support. And the paid references there are the paid references to the PowerPoint presentation that you have before you. If you look to the next row over, or column over, excuse me, you see the program description. And in that column, the page references are to the budget page in the governor's proposed budget, so you can refer back to that. The next column over, again, references the current appropriations. The next column over represents the household served for that program. And so if you're looking at the challenge program, it's pages 16 to 18 in the budget page, $21.8 million of current appropriations. We serve 954 households in that program at a median income of $25,700. And then we describe the gap or opportunity, what the justification for additional resources for that program. And then the next column over, proposed fiscal 08-09 appropriations, is the total appropriation proposed, $36.8 million. And the increase proposed by the governor, $15 million, and then the page reference to the change item in the governor's proposed budget. And the final column is the additional households that we think will be served with those additional appropriations. So that is the guide to how this table is constructed, and now and in the future can serve as a reference point for you as you put together the budget. What I'd like to do now is spend some time going through each program category and walking through the PowerPoint for the time that I have. And what time, Mr. Chair, would you like me to be finished by? I will.
Let's shoot for 20 after. Okay. Give us 10 minutes for questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Now, the first program, and I'll be referring to pages 9 through 12 of the PowerPoint presentation, is the Challenge Program. This is a program that provides resources and loans for workforce housing throughout the state of Minnesota, and we provide that by providing zero interest deferred loans to developers and local government units and others. We leverage significant private resources with that resource. The governor is again recommending an additional $15 million to this program. Pages 10 and 11 give you two examples. 10 and 11 of the PowerPoint presentation give you two examples of projects that have been funded through the Challenge Program. The first one, the Favors family in Eagan, received a Challenge investment of just about $600,000 and a total development cost of $5.5 million for a development in Eagan. And this helped this young family with this working nurse to get into an affordable apartment in her apartment in Aaron Place in Eagan. And that is the type of family and situation we try to serve in this program, working families who need some assistance with housing. The second program, or program example, is page 11, the Heart of City in Burnsville. Total development cost of $7.4 million, $500,000 of Challenge resources for a 34-unit townhome rental development as a part of a broader development in Burnsville that was near services and transportation to be able to help these working families be able to afford housing in the suburb. Page 12 is an example of a habitat home that was built near Hibbing this past summer. There was a ceremony up there, and it was trees from the area cleared from the Wellstone Memorial that actually helped to build this home. And the reason that we're citing this example is the potential use of future resources for the Challenge Program. Habitat for Humanity, which does a tremendous job throughout the state, is having difficulty getting land, because land in many places, even though the market is a little bit softening right now, is very, very expensive, particularly in growing communities. And so one of the ideas that we have, and I've talked to Habitat and others, is to develop a land acquisition fund for Habitat to use with its resources. We will leverage other resources so Habitat can acquire land and build homes for working families throughout the state of Minnesota. That's one specific use that we anticipate the additional appropriations being used for. The next program category that I'll refer to are pages 13 to 18 of the PowerPoint, Homeless Prevention and Supportive Services. Much of the previous testimony on the bill really relates to the programs that we run through this program. There are three programs in this category: Family Homeless Prevention, the Housing Trust Fund, and Bridges. Again, serving very, very low income. If you turn to page 14 of the PowerPoint presentation, you get some examples of those that have been served through this program and other resources that we devote to this effort. Sarah is an example of a person who was served through a homeless outreach program that you heard about earlier, a type of program, partnered with the St. Paul Police Department and housing providers to get people off the streets. And Sarah, who had been on the streets for over 30 years, is now housed under this program. On the right-hand column, on page 14, you see an example of Michael, who was a homeowner in Minneapolis. And he is now receiving assistance after he had a significant health care crisis and was left homeless as a result of that. He is now back in a home and is looking forward to being employed again. I think what this demonstrates through this program, that many of us know people who have been homeless, who are homeless, or are facing difficulties. And many of us as well are three or four situations of bad luck or making bad decisions away from that situation. And I think Michael is an example. Somebody was employed, a homeowner, had a health care crisis, and we see examples like this throughout the state who need some assistance to get back on their feet. Page 15 is an example of a capital development that was funded in part with the proceeds of these programs. The Al Lair Veterans and Community Studio Apartments in St. Cloud, which opened this past spring. 16% of our long-term homeless are veterans, and this program is primarily designed for veterans and demonstrates the type of partnerships that are necessary to address homelessness. So we have the St. Cloud HRA as owner. We have Catholic Charities from St. Cloud as a service provider. We have veterans organizations and others who are assisting these veterans who have 60 units in this development in St. Cloud. And a similar development was opened in Minneapolis this past fall as well. Moving to page 16 is a summary of the progress under the business plan to end long-term homelessness, which Ms. Nielsen referred to earlier. And we use the funding in these three programs to achieve the outcomes that we are reaching for here. The goal was, and this plan began in 2004, the goal was to be at 1,000 units by the end of last year. We reached 1,091 housing opportunities, both in new construction, funds being committed, and rental assistance. We had intended to spend for those 1,091 units, or to commit funding for the housing portion of $72 million, and because we were able to get more rental assistance units in the private market, we have committed only $64 million. So basically, we're ahead of plan and on budget. One thing that I want to spend a little bit of time on is the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program that was referred to earlier. The governor is recommending a doubling of that program, an additional $7.5 million. And if we are able to obtain those resources, that will help address the homeless youth problem as well. That is money that is set out throughout the state in a very flexible way for local providers and counties and social service providers to decide to how they want to address the homeless needs in their various communities. That has been a very successful program because it is very cost-effective to prevent homelessness rather than paying for the consequences of homelessness. And so as we look at this plan and the homeless plans that have been developed by Hennepin County and Ramsey County, all of them recommend an increase in assistance and need for the Family Homeless Prevention Program, and we have responded by recommending a doubling of that program. I will skip over page 17, which basically demonstrates that we are solving long-term homeless by funding rental assistance and capital projects throughout the entire state. Those 1,091 units are provided throughout the state. Page 18, again, describes two instances of individuals and families that have been assisted through the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. And again, one of the common themes that we are seeing through this is that many times it's a healthcare crisis that results in somebody being at risk of homelessness or finding themselves in homelessness, and this program then is used to provide temporary rental assistance or whatever resources are necessary to get that family back on track. So this is one of the more aggressive areas in the governor's budget, is to continue to meet the needs of those who are experiencing homelessness in our state, and by trying to stay on track, as we have been with the business plan to end long-term homelessness, and reaching out and partnering with those other efforts as it relates to youth, to what's going on in Hennepin and St. Louis and Ramsey counties, and throughout the state, as each region is now jumping on board and developing their own efforts to address homelessness. The next program category is our homeownership category. Through this program, we provide assistance to first-time homebuyers primarily to provide down payment assistance, entry cost assistance in terms of deferred second mortgages on their homes that are payable when they resell the property. Again, we serve very low-income families with this program, and we partner with the financial industry who originate the loans, private financial institutions, which we then buy to provide the assistance. And the governor is recommending an additional $1.77 million for this program. This program had been zeroed out in the last two biennia during the terms of the fiscal crisis because these funds recycle back to us, but we think it's very important that we recapitalize this fund so that we can continue to meet the growing and emerging needs throughout the state. Page 20 gives you an example of a homeowner that was assisted through this program. George is an emerging market borrower who just bought a home in Eagan. George works three jobs, one of which is full-time, and his wife is a full-time student. They first went to a bank and were recommended that they take out an adjustable rate mortgage that would have a rate, blended rate of anywhere between 8.5 and 11% that would have resulted in a monthly payment of over $2,200, and the rate could have increased in 2 years if interest rates rose. Through our program, they were able to get $4,800 assistance in down payment entry cost assistance at a rate of 5.95% at a monthly payment of $1,600 in comparison to the $2,200 that they would have received in the private market as recommended to them. In addition, George had credit problems and needed special counseling and negotiation with the credit credit agency so that they could take a really hard look at his current credit history to make this a bankable loan. And through our programs, we were able to provide that assistance and get George and his family into a home. And there are thousands of examples like this throughout the state that we've gotten into homes as a result of this program. The next program I will talk about is our preservation programs. And in our preservation programs, we have two types of programs. And I'll be referring to pages 21 through 25 of the PowerPoint. We have programs, the PARA program, the $17.9 million base, is used primarily to incent those who are in the Federal Housing Assistance Section 8 program, developers and owners, to stay in that program rather than to convert those units to market rate. And so we provide incentives, and as a result, the developer agrees to stay in the subsidized program, and we are then able to leverage the federal dollars, those continuing housing assistance payments from the federal government. This has a tremendous record of leveraging the federal dollars. Over the course of this program, for every $1 of state money invested, we pull down $5.30 of federal money. And that is the important record of this program. And as you see on page 22, we have assisted programs throughout the state with this preservation program to maintain affordable housing. The other program that is funded in this effort are rehabilitation loans for single-family residences for very low-income individuals. The governor is recommending a $4.6 million increase in this program. Page 23 is an example of the type of individuals who have been served under this program. Linda and Tony are elderly sisters who live in Le Sueur County, who lived in a home without running water. And as they were getting aging and they wanted to stay in their home, they needed to rehab that home to provide running water so that they could age in place and not go into a nursing home. They received a $20,000 loan through our program, and that was assisted and matched by a local program. And those sisters are now well-housed and housed for the long term in their home with indoor plumbing, which is very important this time of year in Le Sueur County. The one thing the governor has recommended as the change item in this program, and I'll refer to page 24 of the PowerPoint, is that we have a growing crisis in our traditional public housing infrastructure in the state of Minnesota. We have 22,000 units of public housing run by PHAs and HRAs throughout the state that serve senior, disabled, and very low-income individuals. The federal government has only funded these programs over the last several years for about 75% of need. Some public housing authorities have been forced to sell units, like St. Paul, in order to maintain their current program. The governor is recommending $2.5 million to stabilize those public housing units that are at most risk of being taken out of the affordable housing stock. And we will continue aggressive lobbying at the federal level to get this funding restored. There are some positive signs from the continuing resolution passed by Congress that the bleeding is stopping, but we need to preserve this housing stock, our traditional public housing stock, if we are going to continue to address homelessness and other housing needs. We've got to maintain that stock. The final program I will discuss is our residential organizational support programs that come in two forms. One is the homeownership education, counseling, and training program. And the one thing I want to highlight there as it relates to the new funding that are recommended is summarized on page 26 of the PowerPoint presentation. As you know, we've all been reading a lot about increased foreclosures throughout the state and nation. And we want to direct these resources, these new resources, to communities that are facing foreclosure rates above the statewide average. And this program allows us to provide financial assistance through our delivery partners in terms of temporary assistance so that people can stay in their homes, or provides a type of counseling that makes them helps them make a decision to stabilize their credit and perhaps sell their home because they don't have financial stability now, and that they will be able to be a successful homeowner again in the future. And the examples on page 26 really tell the story of those two types of situations. On the left, Beverly and David had been in their home 20 years, only had $37,000 left to pay on it, faced a health care crisis, and were in the foreclosure process. They were able to find Habitat for Humanity, one of the organizations we fund to run this program. They were provided financial assistance, a deferred loan through this program, and are now again successfully housed and out of the foreclosure process. Annie, on the right side of the PowerPoint presentation, is a homeowner in Stearns County who lost her job, got another job, but it didn't provide a very stable income. And she was able, through this program, to negotiate a new deal with her mortgagee, and get a loan modification. But she did not have a stable enough income to stay in that home, so is now going through the process of selling it, preserving her credit, that at a time when she is more fully employed and more stable, she'll be able to buy a home again because her credit has been preserved.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Take a breath.
A final comment. I think the governor has proposed a very robust housing budget, a 62% increase that provides the context for addressing significant housing needs and provides the context for meeting a lot of affordable housing needs over the next 2 years, and I commend it for your consideration.
Thank you. Actually, I do have one question that's coming through, and I do have a question of my own, so I'm going to throw mine in first. I'm looking through the numbers here on page 7, and I appreciate you providing us with the kind of the footnotes at the bottom.
Right.
And maybe you can help me work through this real quickly. In 2003, we were currently at $108 million. And then, is that rough? Is that correct? Am I not reading this correct?
Mr. Chair, $108 million is the current amount budgeted in our current affordable housing plan, which does not directly relate to what has been appropriated because that includes some carryover from previous appropriations. It includes bonding dollars appropriated by this legislature. I think the best page to look at is the $70.4
million.
Oh, I'm looking at the CPI? I'm sorry. Okay. All right. I was misunderstanding your question. So
I'm looking at number four on the footnote.
Footnote number four was developed in response to a question posed by the other body. And the appropriations received by the agency in fiscal year 2002 and 2003 were $108 million. And we were asked the question, if that was adjusted for inflation, what would this budget have looked like? And depending upon which inflation index you use, this would be $124 million or $144 million, which is in comparison to the $114 million.
Okay, maybe I'm not being clear.
Right.
Back in 2002-03, what was the funding level for this department? Was it 108? Is that? I mean, that's what I'm reading here. So it was 108, and then because of the fiscal crisis that is here, we're now at 70 million. Okay, and then if we are now proposing $114 million, which I then understand why the other committee asked for the footnote number
right.
four, because where would we be at today
right.
had we not gone through this crisis? So, I mean, I guess I'm trying to wrap my mind around the idea. You use terms like robust and mm-hmm. doubling, and we're like, wow, well, then why the heck would we even be considering anything else to assist? We have all this flood, and it's kind of like, to me, the analogy of, I mean, the house is burnt. It's burnt down to the bottom, and now the fire truck is finally here with all these resources to save. And in some cases, people may be damaged beyond repair. And so I'm looking at this from a point of, well, if we now are finally funding sources, we still aren't at current levels with this proposal. It adjusted for inflation, use either one, the CPI or the other cost index, we're still below that number. So, I mean, I just trying to keep things in perspective in my mind as I look forward to other legislation to help in this area. I don't know that we're necessarily meeting all the needs, and I guess that I just wanted to make that point.
Mr. Chair, your point is accurate, and the information on footnote 4 is accurate.
Okay.
I think it is, however, helpful to understand that one of the things the Housing Finance Agency has been able to benefit from over the course of time has been one-time appropriations, when there has been one-time money available, that we are able to use to a significant degree to meet the needs for affordable housing throughout the state. And we are a place that is a good repository for one-time money because we can build something and finance it, and it stays in the housing stock for many years and doesn't have those ongoing cables.
Great.
And so I think we are a more an acceptable place to have ups and downs in our appropriations depending upon what the current need is and what the current fiscal situation is. Now that we have emerged from the fiscal crisis, I think $114 million, which is the largest base budget proposed ever for this agency, does put us in very good standing to meet the needs of affordable housing throughout the state.
Thank you. Representative Morgan, you got 3 minutes.
I'll try to take less, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Commissioner Marks, I want to echo the sentiments of the chair, but I would like to ask you, it seems to me that we have, you have numbers down here, additional households projected to be served, somewhere around 19,000, maybe as many as 20,000 additional households to be served. My estimation from what I'm hearing in my community, extrapolating that out to the rest of the state and from what we've heard in previous committee meetings, is there are more households that could be served if only we could. So my question to you would be, would the governor be interested in serving more households if only the revenue were there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that the governor, in developing his proposed budget and in listening to us and listening to other departments and in developing priorities, made the decision that housing was a priority and put more significant new resources into housing and related items to address these needs. And I think throughout the rest of the budget process in working with the legislature, I know the governor and we all are and interested in meeting as much of the need as possible, but it's a matter of balance and priority about how much need and capacity do you have to put money into the system to continue to address the need. So it's, I think the process will unfold over the course of the next few months.
Just one last thing,
Representative Morgan.
I do want to thank you, Commissioner Marks, for including the stories in here. I think you have some great stories about some individuals and families that are really well served by your commission and the Minnesota Finance Housing Association. I think it's wonderful. So thank you very much for those stories today.
Any other questions? Representative Clark?
Just one question. You know, I thank you for your presentation, too. And there's a lot of wisdom in that agency. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if you can share with us those places, and maybe not here today, but where you had other recommendations that are not in the governor's budget. For example, what did you propose as compared to what actually is before us in the governor's bill? So if there were higher numbers, lower numbers, those would be helpful for us to know, if they're based on need, that you, in your judgment.
Commissioner Marks?
Madam Chair, members, there is a significant amount of information about what the housing needs are throughout the state, and we worked with the governor to come up with a budget that, again, recommends the largest base budget in history for Minnesota housing that we think allows us during the next biennium to do a good job of meeting that need. There is always more need than there is capacity and resources to develop, but we can do a tremendous amount with these resources to continue the momentum that I described in my overview presentation about the good affordable housing record we have in the state.
Thank you, Commissioner Marks. Follow up, Representative Clark.
Yeah, so can you give us those numbers or not?
Commissioner Marks.
Madam Chair, I think the governor's budget speaks for itself. That is what the governor has proposed.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? None. We stand adjourned. Thank you.